minutos.
Listening to the English language news of Khan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation.
It's 8 p.m. in Israel, Sunday, April the 7th, 2024. In the headlines, 6 months to the Gaza war. In the Gaza Strip, four IDF soldiers are killed in an ambush in the south of the enclave. The IDF withdraws ground troops from southern Gaza, leaving one brigade to secure a corridor in the strip. The manhunt continues in Samaria for the terrorist who seriously wounded an IDF soldier and moderately wounded another person in a shooting attack. An Israeli team heads to Cairo for talks on a hostage release and ceasefire deal. Rallies in Jerusalem tonight and around the world demanding the return of the 133 hostages. The weather outlook cool for the time of year. Tomorrow, chance of local rain in the north and along the coast, spreading to the center. Good evening. This is Nomi Segal with the news. Four IDF soldiers were killed in an ambush in the southern Gaza Strip. Captain Ido Baruch, 20, of Tel Mond, a commander in the Commando Unit Training School, Sergeant Amitai Evan Shoshan, 20, of Azriel, Sergeant Eli Zair, 20, of Kedar, and Sergeant Reef Harosh, 20, of Kibbutz Ramat David. They were all trainees in the Commando School. The four were killed during a sweep of Khan Yunis. Terrorists emerged from a tunnel shaft and shot the soldiers at close range. Three soldiers were killed instantly. The fourth was wounded and later died of his injuries. The terrorists disappeared back into the shaft, but the soldiers chasing them did not enter it because they identified booby traps that had been placed at the entrance. As Israel marked the 6 months since the start of the war that broke out with the Hamas terror onslaught on southern Israel in the Gaza periphery, the IDF withdrew all ground troops from the southern Gaza Strip overnight, following four straight months of fighting in the Khan Yunis area. Only the Nahal Brigade remains in the Gaza Strip, tasked with securing the so-called Netzarim Corridor, which crosses Gaza from the Be'eri area in southern Israel to the Mediterranean coast. Shortly before the withdrawal of the forces of the 98th Brigade from Khan Yunis, five rockets were fired from the southern Gaza city toward the Gaza periphery in southern Israel. Two were intercepted. There were no reports of injuries or damage. The IDF says that in the wake of the drawdown in forces, the raids were carried out based on intelligence information proved their efficiency. While operations have concluded in Khan Yunis, the IDF will return as necessary. And in the meantime, the IDF continues to prepare for further operations in the Gaza Strip, including Rafah. A Khan reporter says the drawdown is not stemming from international pressure on Israel. The IDF destroyed three terror tunnels in the Khan Yunis theater of operations. The IDF spokesperson, Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, gave an update on the operations. One of the tunnels started in Khan Yunis and crossed over into Israeli territory. They were identified by the IDF during the process of building an obstacle. Since then, it has been held by our forces in a secret manner. Inside the tunnel, our soldiers placed explosive devices and sensors. It was not used by Hamas on October 7th. Reserve Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, an IDF spokesperson for international media, commented on the redeployment of IDF forces out of Khan Yunis in this interview with the BBC.
The IDF has and is regrouping, conducting its next preparations for the next stage. The war is not over as long as there are 133 Israelis being held by Hamas. The war can only be over when they come home and when Hamas is gone. The reality is one which is unacceptable. We can't accept that Hamas will govern the Gaza Strip precisely because we've seen what they do with the powers of government. They take advantage of that. They build a terrorist army. They came into our bedrooms, abducted, killed, murdered, massacred. that needs to change.
But can you provide, Lieutenant Colonel Lerner, more details on this movement? Is it a rotation? Will they be replaced? Or does this represent a significant shift in the military campaign?
The military campaign is continuously evolving. And this is just another stage in the war effort. As we completed our mission in Khan Yunis, in the Khan Yunis area, so then the troops rotate out. And we have other troops that are operating elsewhere. So it's important to understand it is a decline in the forces, but there's more operations that need to be conducted. Rafah is clearly a stronghold where there are four battalions untouched and where we released two hostages from just last month. So we need to be able to get all of the hostages back wherever they are. We need to dismantle Hamas's capabilities wherever they are, and we will immobilize our forces accordingly. The forces aren't in the Gaza Strip just to take control of Gaza. That's not the intention by any stretch of the imagination. The forces are there to get rid of Hamas and bring back the hostages.
Reserve Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, an IDF spokesperson to international media. According to data released by the IDF marking since 6 months since the outbreak of the war, the number of fallen soldiers since the start of the war, number 604, of them 256 since the start of the ground maneuvers in the Strip. 41 soldiers were killed in operational accidents since the start of the war. 3,193 IDF soldiers were wounded. As of April 4th, 26 soldiers were hospitalized in serious condition. In Samaria today, a 19-year-old woman soldier was seriously wounded in a terrorist shooting. The shooting occurred on Route 55 between Azoun and Nabi Ilyas when terrorists opened fire on civilian vehicles, including a bus. A preliminary investigation showed that the terrorist was lying in wait on the side of the road. A man traveling in a car was moderately wounded. The bus in which the woman was traveling continued on to the settlement of Karni Shomron, where she received initial medical treatment before being evacuated to the hospital. The wounded man was traveling in a private vehicle and continued until Eliyahu Crossing, where he received initial medical treatment, but also before being evacuated to hospital. The manhunt for the attacker continues. Meanwhile, Israeli sappers neutralized a large explosive that was in the car of the terrorist who carried out the attack. Security forces also recovered the weapon that he used in the attack. Dr. Yaakov Seligman, a resident of the area who responded to the attack, described the events and the treatment and evacuation of the wounded.
I was just called to a terrorist attack right near my hometown of Karni Shomron on the Route 55 between Kfar Saba next to Kalkilia and Karni Shomron. An Arab terrorist opened fire on a pedestrian bus as well as a civilian vehicle traveling on Route 55. There were 300 persons, one woman injured lightly who was in emotional shock, another man who was injured from shrapnel that hit him in the shoulder, and a 19 years old who was shot in the shoulder and in the chest. She's in very serious condition. I got there within a few minutes and I was able to join the MADA team in the ambulance that you see behind me. We provided life-saving treatment on the scene, and when I got to her, she was bleeding profusely from her shoulder and from her chest as well as her hand. We provided life-saving treatment to stop the bleeding while we took her to the ambulance. Once we were in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, we performed multiple surgical procedures and unfortunately had to sedate her and put in a tube to help her breathe because she was not breathing effectively and there was much blood in her lungs. We brought her to the hospital in severe shock, but we were able to provide multiple medical procedures as well as medicines that were able to save her life. Along with the surgical procedures that we performed, we got her here in serious yet stable condition. We continued to help them here in the hospital in the shock trauma room until she was stable, where they took her to CT, and hopefully she will be okay.
Dr. Yaakov Seligman in Balanton Hospital reported this afternoon that the wounded woman soldier is in serious and stable condition after undergoing surgery. In the north, Israel Air Force fighter aircraft this afternoon struck a military compound with seven military structures of the Hezbollah Rejwan force in the area of Al-Hayyam in South Lebanon. In addition, IDF forces hit a Hezbollah military command site in the area of Trura. Dozens of rockets were fired this morning from Lebanon toward the southern and northern Golan Heights. No injuries or damage were reported. IDF artillery targeted the source of the fire. Rocket landings were also identified today in open areas next to Manara in the Upper Galilee. The IDF also responded. Earlier, the Air Force attacked three military installations of Hezbollah's aerial defense systems in the area of Baalbek. The IDF spokesperson's unit said the attack was in retaliation for the downing of an Israel Air Force drone in Lebanese territory. Defense Minister Yoav Gallant says that Israel has completed preparations to respond to any scenario that may unfold with Iran as Tehran threatens to avenge last week's attack on an Iranian consular building in Damascus that it blames on Israel. Gallant said over the weekend that the preparation, readiness, and alertness are not synonymous with panic and fear. The enemy has been severely damaged everywhere and is therefore looking for ways to respond. We are ready with multi-layered defense. In the south, a suspected aerial infiltration alert was sounded this afternoon in Eilat in the Eilot region of the Arava, which turned out to be false. The area has been on a high alert. Last week, there were three drone incidents. A drone launched from Iraq struck and damaged a building of an Israeli Navy base in Eilat. One fell inside Jordan close to the Ramon airport, and a third was intercepted in the area of the kilometer 101 rest stop. In light of the incident, GPS was scrambled in the region. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in remarks marking 6 months of the war, says we are a step away from victory, but the price we have had to pay has been painful and high. Speaking at the start of the weekly cabinet meeting, Netanyahu said, "We will never forget the horrific crimes committed by the Hamas monsters who still hold hostage 133 of our brothers and sisters. As of today, we've returned 124 hostages and we are committed to returning them all home. I made it clear to the international community there will be no ceasefire without the return of the hostages. It simply won't happen," he said. Netanyahu added, "Israel is not the one preventing a deal. Hamas is preventing a deal. Its extreme demands are designed to bring about a ceasefire and leave Hamas intact. Capitulation to Hamas's demands would allow it to try and repeat the crimes of October 7th, as it has promised to do," the prime minister said. Meanwhile, the IDF chief of staff, Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi, in a statement marking half a year since October 7th attacks, said that despite the withdrawal of the 98th Division from Khan Yunis, the war in Gaza is continuing and we are far from stopping it. He said one of the aims of the war, the return of the hostages, is urgent and important, and the timeline for this is different than the timeline for other objectives. According to reports, the IDF chief of staff also conveyed a message to the political echelon to let them know the IDF is strong enough so that the state of is strong enough for the state of Israel and can pay difficult prices for the release of its hostages. The War Cabinet convened this morning and agreed to dispatch an Israeli delegation to Cairo to continue talks to try to reach another ceasefire and hostage deal. A Khan reporter says it was decided to slightly expand the mandate of the delegation, which is headed by the Mossad director, David Barnea, the Shin Bet director, Ronen Bar, and Reserve Major General Nitzan Alon. Israel is interested in foreseeing Hamas's reservations and only then conveying Jerusalem's position in order to advance the dynamic in the negotiations, according to reports. A diplomatic source told Khan that there is not excessive optimism. The delegation is traveling with defined boundaries in order to hear the proposal of the mediators and what response they bring from Hamas. The source said the Israeli officials will make clear to the CIA chief and other senior officials that maximum pressure must be put on Hamas, not Israel. Another Israeli source told Khan that these are critical days for a deal. There are contacts to try to reach an agreement with the start of Eid al-Fitr, the Muslim holiday that marks the end of the Ramadan month. This evening, we will know if Hamas is truly interested in a deal. Top-level representatives from the mediator countries, Egypt, Qatar, and the United States, are in the Egyptian capital. An informed Arab source said the negotiations in Cairo will address, among other things, new ways to get aid into the Gaza Strip and its distribution through various means. The source said the issue of the return of displaced Palestinians to the northern Gaza Strip is still the most complicated one and is the primary stumbling block preventing progress in negotiations in Doha and Cairo. The source said other issues, such as the number of Palestinian prisoners that would be freed and their identities, is one on which agreement can be reached. The former head of the Eshkol Regional Council, Chaim Yellen, who lives on kibbutz in the Gaza periphery, says expressed hope that a release deal could be reached that will make it possible for the captives to celebrate Passover in the embrace of their families. A rally is being held in Jerusalem this evening, marking 6 months, 184 days that 133 hostages have been held in captivity in the Gaza Strip. Among those speaking at the rally are released hostages, relatives of hostages, and representatives of bereaved families. Rallies to free the hostages are also taking place in dozens of cities worldwide today, including New York, Washington, D.C., Berlin, Amsterdam, and Paris. In Tel Aviv earlier, demonstrators painted their hands red to symbolize blood and lay it on the ground in the form of an hourglass. Yifat Calderon, whose cousin Ofer Calderon is held hostage, told the Associated Press there is a feeling that the captives are forgotten.
We're here today because it's already 6 months after the 7th of October, and we mention it with the hourglass. The feeling is that they were forgotten behind, all the hostages here in Israel and also around the world. And I want to, I'm calling everybody, don't forget them. Do everything to bring them back home.
At Calderon, cousin of Ofer Calderon. The families of the hostages held in captivity in the Gaza Strip last night canceled a planned rally in Tel Aviv and instead issued an urgent plea in Tel Aviv for the return of their loved ones. This afternoon, of the body of hostage Elad Katsir, 47, being recovered from Gaza. The IDF said over the weekend its special forces had recovered the body of Katsir, believed to have been killed in captivity in January, raising concerns among family members about the fate of the remaining hostages. Sharon Calderon, sister-in-law of hostage Ofer Calderon, issued an urgent plea for the return of the hostages now, speaking last night.
Today we got very bad message about Elad Katsir. He was hostage for 3 months. He could handle 3 months, and then they killed him. We don't know what about all the rest. This is the time, not a day more. This is the time to bring them back, all of them, as soon as possible. We have to bring them back home.
Sharon Calderon. Thousands of demonstrators protested in Tel Aviv and other locations across the country last night. A driver rammed into the crowd in Tel Aviv, injuring five. The remand in custody of the driver who drove into the group of protesters was extended by 24 hours. Police questioned the man overnight and asked the court to extend his remand in order to continue the interrogation. The driver told police he did not mean to drive into the crowd. He said a technical malfunction caused the car to suddenly speed up. Police are also investigating whether or not he was drunk. Protests last night, also calling for early elections. The Shin Bet Security Agency says that Iranian elements were likely behind a delivery of a wreath of flowers of the sort usually laid at graves to the home of hostage Liri Elbag. Attached to the wreath was a note reading, "May her memory be a blessing. We all know that the country is more important." The Shin Bet said it is continuing to investigate the incident. Elbag, a IDF border observer, was taken hostage during the Hamas attack on the Nahal Oz base. In the South today, relatives and friends of those murdered at the Supernova Festival on October 7th gathered at the site to mourn and try to get a sense of their loss. They also held a news conference and voiced frustration with the lack of support, they say, from the government in dealing with the hardships they are facing. Erez Tsarfati, whose 22-year-old daughter Ron was murdered, spoke to Reuters.
It's, you know, it's a war of children, after all. If you look at the 400 people who are dancing here, most of them are like 20, 22. My daughter was 22 years old. Most of our soldiers, most of our very brave, special soldiers are children at the ages of 18 to 21. So this is a war of children. There's nothing we can do about it. Our army is based on very young children. We haven't received any invitation or whatever from any official in the government. So we are very, very disappointed. We expected and we are still expecting the government to look into our situation, make a huge, very deep research on how our needs, and try to give us solutions, our unique solutions, according to our needs.
Bereaved Father Erez Sarfati speaking at the site of the Nova Festival. As 6 months is being marked since the outbreak of the war, reporter Mark Weiss spoke with Itamar Yar, former deputy head of the National Security Council and the head of Commanders for Israel Security, a nonpartisan movement of retired senior members of the defense establishment.
We went to war when we were not ready for it, but I think that the IDF and all the other organizations have done a relatively good job until now, fighting. The situation is different now from what it was 6 months ago. First of all, most of the Hamas power disappeared or was destroyed. And this is one of the main aims of this war. We failed until now to reach and to achieve the other main goal, is to release the hostages. Some of them were released, most of them didn't, and the time is working against them and against all the Israeli public. In terms of what is happening to the Palestinian population on the ground, I think that what had a good reason to destroy many, many places as part of the fighting against the Hamas activists in the first time, and only if it was very necessary, uninvolved people were suffered and some of them were killed as well. I think the situation now is different. I think that now the cause to fight the Hamas doesn't allow us to use the same tactics. And this is the reason, I believe, why the IDF recently is going and using other types of operations. Most of them are part of what we call special operations and not the heavy forces that we used in the past. I think that the main message that we get from the last half a year is that, first of all, the Palestinians will not disappear. Secondly, it's obvious that Israel will not control the Gaza Strip in the future. Thirdly, that those that will control it will be some kind of a Palestinian organization with the help of local regional forces. And I think that Israel failed until now to convince the international community and mainly the regional forces, the Arab forces of the region, that want to help us to go out of Gaza and to fight against Iran. We failed to do it.
So where do we go? Where do we go from here then? How do we stop being stuck in the Gaza quagmire? How do we turn tactical, local successes into a strategic victory? There are some who say now is the time to stop the fighting and close a deal with Hamas, whatever the price is, and it's, we know it's going to be a heavy price, as long as we can ensure that all the hostages are returned, those who are alive and those who are dead. And this will enable us to deal properly with the Northern Front, with the Lebanese border, something we haven't talked about either by striking a deal with Hezbollah or by military means to push Hezbollah far from the border. Where do we go from now?
I fully agree with you that we need to go to a deal and to release the hostages. I'm not so sure that it's easy to do it, mainly because I believe, based on what we see in the last few months, that those that take the decisions in the Hamas, and this is Yihyeh Sinwar and him alone, he doesn't have an interest to release all the hostages. So we need to do whatever we can. We need to say that we are ready to pay the price. I hope that the other side will agree to it.
But if not, then what? Then we have to attack Rafah despite the very strong opposition from the U.S. to such a move?
Look, what had happened last week with the World Kitchen Organization, I think at least delayed dramatically any heavy operation in Rafah. I'm not so sure that we have the credibility and we will be able to do it in the next few months. And yes, the situation is difficult, and Israel needs to pay the price and to cut the losses. And this is exactly the impression that I have. I am sorry to say that we could have do the same long ago, but we need to do it even now.
Israeli leaders, militarily and political leaders, keep threatening to attack Hezbollah in South Lebanon if there's no agreement there that will enable the 60,000 Israeli evacuees to return. Do you believe it's even possible for Israel to launch an attack on South Lebanon as long as the Gaza war is not completed?
The short answer is yes, the IDF can do it. The question is, what will be the price? It's obvious that as long as we and most of the IDF forces are in the south, the price of opening a real front of war, not fighting as it is now, but war in the north, will cause us many casualties among the civilians and among the military, because much of our forces need still to be in the south. Now, Israel doesn't have any interest to go to war in the north, because we all know that in the end of this war, we will not occupy Lebanon, we will not destroy Hezbollah, and even not closer to what we have done to the Hamas. So if you can reach an agreement in the north without going through a war, it's an Israeli interest. There is no doubt about it. But there is another question. And the other question is Iran. Because Iran don't give orders to Hezbollah, but Iran give advice to Hezbollah. And Iran is a heavy player, a very important player, every time that we speak about the North, every time that we speak about the Hezbollah. Altogether, I believe that to evacuate most of the Israeli population from the north was a big mistake. It was not done by the authorities. It was done by one of the chairmen of the local municipalities in the north that started it, and all the others followed in. I think that the population itself, most of people understood it, and this is the reason why many of them went back. I don't speak about Manara. I speak about most of the other places. What we need to do now, we need now to try to attack every Hezbollah position that we know about, step by step, not all of them together, to make sure and to try to achieve two main goals. One, to deter Hezbollah. Yes, you can deter Hezbollah from opening a full war, because it's not Hezbollah and it's not Iran interest. Secondly, you need to do it, and this is what is happening in the last few months already, to make sure that you destroy one by one the Hezbollah positions along the border and even in the Baca Valley, to make sure that if we will have to go to war, all these facilities will not be part of that war.
Itamar Yar, former deputy head of the National Security Council and head of the Commanders for Israel Security. 6 months after the Hamas onslaught on Israel's south, 70% of the population of the affected area in the south is back home, with only a handful of locales remaining uninhabited, according to the government. Of the 57,000 people who've been evacuees from the south as of the end of February, at least 40,000 residents, including some 23,000 from Sderot alone, are living in their municipalities situated within 7 kilometers of the border, according to the Tkuma Authority, the government arm responsible for rehabilitating the south, in a statement marking half a year since the devastating attack. Some 13 locales, including Be'eri, Kfar Aza, Nir Oz, and Kerem Shalom, are either too heavily damaged to be inhabited or deemed by the army to be at too great a risk to be resettled at this time. Tkuma has spent roughly 2.25 billion shekels of its budget of 18 billion shekels for rehabilitating the area over the next 5 years, it said in the update. Remaining evacuees are living in state-funded accommodations, including in hotels and in communities, including Kiryat Gat, Mishmar HaEmek, and Be'er Sheva. Another approximately 60,000 evacuees from the north near the border with Lebanon are living in similar conditions. Northern confrontation line communities remain nearly empty of all residents who evacuated, and local leaders have warned that their regions are struggling. The mayor of Kiryat Shmona, Avichai Stern, said that the heavy damage caused to many homes in the city is because Hezbollah is using new weapons. He again called on the Israeli government to make a radical change to the security reality along the confrontation line and stressed he will not instruct evacuated residents to return to be what he termed targets in a duck beat range. Hezbollah has essentially defeated us, he told Khan. Where's the agriculture? Where's the tourism? We're going bankrupt. Where's our life? Our life.
Hatra'a. Tzfat.
And that was a warning for rockets in Tzfat and in the north. There are also in other, in Tzfat, Kadita, Gush Chalav, Dalton communities in the north, a rocket alert at this hour to enter secure spaces. The head of the Metula Council, David Azulai, also spoke of the heavy economic damage the northern region has sustained. He said all the high-tech companies have left Metula. The war began and not a single company out of 26 remained here. The buildings are empty. And if we want to continue to tell the story, we need to not only ensure that these companies come back, but that others come as well. And the area will continue to grow and flourish. It is first and foremost an interest of the State of Israel. On this difficult milestone of 6 months, family members of hostages say they never imagined their loved ones would still be in captivity. Meirav Leshem Gonen, mother of hostage Romy Gonen, who was kidnapped from the Nova Festival, spoke to the Associated Press.
How we are dealing with the fact that this is half a year, I'm mostly ignoring. It is impossible to grasp the fact that my daughter is already half a year in Gaza. Although I have my own sticker of the days, it is difficult. We never believed it will take such a long time. I never imagined she will stay there so long. And every day we wake up and take a big breath, deep breath, and continue walking, continue doing the things that will bring her back as soon as possible. I never imagined it will take so long. In the first week when she was kidnapped, at the second day, at the 8th of October, I was supposed to have a rehearsal with the piano player that plays with me when I'm singing. And I was telling him, don't cancel it. It's on Wednesday. Romy will come back to today, tomorrow, the next day. And we will have the rehearsal because we have a performance on Friday. I think that the world wants to forget because it's so difficult to think about it even, to imagine it, to agree that such a horrible reality can exist. So I don't know if the world really forgot, but I know he prefers sometimes to ignore it, since it is so hard, so painful. But we are doing everything we can so the world will not forget, because first, this is my daughter that needs to come back, and this is the fault not just of Israel government, but this is the fault and the responsibility of the whole world. When I think of Romy in the night or in the morning or whenever it stops for a minute, first I know she might be very angry at me, because I didn't do my job as a mother to get her back soon. But also I can hear her laughter and the way she says Chaimi or Chaim Sheli, which is my life, or how she says Imush, which means my mom. And I can hear her laughter. And I know that when she will come back, we will have a long time of healing time, but she will be with us. I have no idea what is going on with my daughter. I don't know how she looks like. I don't know if she's thinner because she's not eating. I don't know if she lost her hand. She has a gunshot in her hand, and her hand wasn't in a good situation. I have no idea. Maybe she lost her hand. Maybe. I have no idea. I have no information about her. Nothing. Nothing. Not a picture, not a sign, nothing.
Mirav Leshem Gonen, mother of hostage Romy Gonen. Family members of the hostage continue to advocate for the release of their loved ones here in Israel as well as abroad. Pope Francis has agreed to a request from Israel's foreign minister, Yisrael Katz, to grant an audience tomorrow to families of hostages who are accompanying the Israeli government minister on his visit to Italy. Katz said that the support of the Pope carries significant moral and practical weight, and that he is convinced it will contribute to efforts to return the hostages home. Katz noted the meeting takes place as a continuation of meetings he held with the Italian foreign minister and the Jewish community, and other planned meetings tomorrow with the Italian ministers of defense and interior affairs. Hirsch Golden, Poland, 23, was also among those taken hostage by Hamas at the Supernova Music Festival on October 7th. He hid with a friend in a roadside bomb shelter with 27 other people. Terrorists threw hand grenades and sprayed gunfire into the bunker, killing many and injuring others, including Hirsch. Hirsch's mother, Rachel Goldberg, spoke to NBC News about the effort the families make to continue to function in order to save their loved ones.
First thing in the morning, I always say to myself, and now pretend to be human. And I get out of bed and I put on this costume of being a person. I have a walk that I do now in the mornings that I've crafted so that I don't see anybody. And I walk with my head down and I always wear sunglasses. I often have a hood. If I see people in the distance, I cross to the other side of the street. And all day long, it's kind of like someone's holding a branding iron on your back, and you can't let anybody know. I was asked early on if I would speak at the United Nations in New York, and so I did.
Why is no one crying out for these people to be allowed access to the Red Cross? Why is no one demanding just proof of life?
We felt that the advocacy for the hostage situation was so important that we really never wanted to say no. I've had episodes where I do break. It's better when I know that it's coming and I can, you know, say, I'll be right back and, you know, go to my room or go to the bathroom or go somewhere where it's not so public. But that's not the way trauma works. So there are definitely times where I'm out there screaming or crying or laying on the street. I'm also extremely heartbroken over the unbelievable suffering of hundreds of thousands of innocent Gazan people, what they are going through. It's unbearable and so painful to watch. Right now, there are hundreds of thousands of people suffering in this on both sides. And it's time for the suffering to stop. On Shabbat morning, I sit down cross-legged right in front of this big poster that we have of him that is behind our front door. I look into his eyes and I talk to him and I tell him, you have to stay strong mentally, spiritually, psychologically, physically, religiously. You have to survive. You have no choice. We are coming. You can make it through this and you're going to have a long, beautiful life.
Rachel Goldberg, mother of hostage Hirsch Goldberg, Poland. Taking a midway look at the headlines this evening, a short while ago, rocket alerts sounded in the northern city of Tzfat and other communities. Four IDF soldiers are killed in an ambush in the southern Gaza Strip. The IDF withdraws ground troops from the Khan Yunis area, leaving one brigade to secure a corridor in the enclave. The manhunt continues in Samaria for the terrorist who seriously wounded an IDF soldier and moderately wounded another person in a shooting attack. The war cabinet authorizes the Israeli team to return to Cairo for talks on a hostage release and ceasefire deal. On the six-month mark of the war, started by the October 7th Hamas-led attack on southern Israel, rallies in Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and around the world tonight demanding the return of the 133 hostages. The weather outlook cool for the time of year tomorrow. Chance of local rain in the north and along the coast spreading to the center. In the wake of the deadly strike by Israeli forces on the World Central Kitchen convoy in the Gaza Strip and U.S. President Joe Biden's tense conversation with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu last week, Israel's Security Cabinet decided to take immediate steps to improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza. The Prime Minister's office announced on Friday Israel will temporarily open up the Ashdod port for humanitarian deliveries and will open the Erez crossing in the northern Gaza Strip for the first time since it was significantly damaged and many Israelis were killed and abducted there during the October 7th attack that sparked the ongoing war. Israel will also increase the amount of aid from Jordan moving through the Kerem Shalom crossing. The moves were welcomed by the White House, which called for Israel to immediately implement them. White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby, in an interview on ABC's This Week program with Martha Raddatz, declined to specify potential consequences if Israel does not dramatically increase humanitarian assistance or bring about a drop in civilian casualties in Gaza. He also was asked for his take on the IDF withdrawal of forces from Khan Yunis.
You said the U.S. position towards Israel could change if there is not a dramatic increase in humanitarian aid and a reduction of the violence against civilians. What will the consequences be if they don't do that?
Well, I don't want to get ahead of the president or close down his decision space, but as you heard us say, and Secretary Blinken as
well.
What
does that mean, decision space?
We need to see change over time. So these announcements, Martha, they're very welcome and they're good. And they are some of the things that the president asked specifically for Prime Minister Netanyahu to do in terms of opening up additional crossings, allowing more trucks in, getting the deconfliction process in place. But now we have to judge it over time. We have to see, not pass the announcements and see if they actually meet these commitments over time in a sustained and verifiable way so that confidence can be restored, not just between aid workers and the IDF, but between the people of Gaza and Israel.
Would you rule out slowing down or pausing weapons transfers if this does not happen?
It's not my place to rule anything in or out today. What I can tell you is that, as the president made clear to Prime Minister Netanyahu, we got to see some changes in the way they're prosecuting these operations, or we're going to have to think about making changes in our own policy towards Gaza.
Okay,
Israel has a right to defend itself, and I think it's important to also remember they live in a tough neighborhood. We're all focused on the fight in Gaza, as we rightly should be, but they're facing threats from Iran and from Iran-backed groups all throughout the region. We got to make sure that they're ready for that.
Quite a threat right now. But the Israeli media is reporting this morning that the IDF withdrew ground troops from southern Gaza. They've been fighting there in Khan Yunus for 4 months. What does that tell you?
Well, it doesn't. It's hard to know exactly what that tells us right now. This was just an announcement that they made. I'd certainly let them speak to their operations as we understand it and through their public announcements. It is really just about rest and refit for these troops that have been on the ground for 4 months and not necessarily, that we can tell, indicative of some coming new operation for these troops. They've been on the ground for 4 months. The word we're getting is they're tired. They need to be refit.
White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby. Defense Minister Yoav Gallant and the U.S. Ambassador to Israel Jack Lew toured the IDF's new humanitarian coordination and deconfliction cell, which was established as part of a series of steps to improve the situation of Palestinians in Gaza amid the ongoing war. According to a defense ministry statement, Gallant said, as we work to achieve the goals of this war, namely the destruction of Hamas and the return of the hostages, we recognize the importance of facilitating the delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza. The statement said Gallant and Lew were briefed on measures being taken to increase the effective inspection, transfer, and distribution of humanitarian aid. An advisor to Iran's supreme leader has warned that Israeli embassies are no longer safe after a strike in the Syrian capital that Tehran blamed on Israel killed 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps last week. The embassies of the Zionist regime are no longer safe, said Yahya Rahim Safavi, a senior advisor to Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. He was quoted by the Isna News Agency. The news agency also published a graphic that it claimed showed 9 types of Iranian missiles that are capable of hitting Israel. Retired Major General Amos Yadlin, president and founder of Mind Israel, a nonprofit focused on national security issues as a former head of Israel's defense intelligence, former deputy commander of Israel's Air Force, and a senior fellow at the Kennedy School's Belfer Center at Harvard University. In a Zoom conversation hosted by Media Central, Yadlin discussed the strategic picture in the war.
6 months into the war, I think strategically Israel has to deal with 5 important decisions in its government, in its war cabinet. First, what are the goals of the war? Should they need to be updated? Because in the first place, when I spoke with you 5 months ago, I said that destroying Hamas totally is not a realistic goal. But what is enough to make sure that it will never happen again? In a way, maybe 4 battalions in Rafah is the what you need to make sure that it will never happen again. And bring back the hostages. Maybe the number one updated goal of the war. Second, what you are doing in the north. Because even if there is ceasefire, unlike the south, that people can go back to their villages, to their kibbutzim, and be safe, in the north, Hezbollah was beaten, but not enough. And the people will not go back without getting guarantees from diplomatic or military move that Nasrallah cannot duplicate what Sinwar have done in the south. So this is the second decision. The third decision was basically described by Rami Avner, what will be in Gaza in the day after, and some elements of Hamas will be there. We have to tell the truth. You cannot change their heart and mind. You cannot change their views, the population of Gaza is supporting them, but Hamas will be much weaker, and who is there to control Hamas is a third question. Next is the relation with the U.S. These relations were very good in the beginning. The Americans still support the 2 goals of the war, to dismantle Hamas and to bring back the hostages. However, Israel and U.S. find themselves with disagreements on Rafah, on the day after, on the humanitarian issue, on the collateral damage, and maybe in the future, how to rebuild Gaza. There is no so much trust between the 2 administrations, and this is something that should be fixed and fast. last, and it will be my last word. I think by now everybody understands the problem is not Gaza. The problem is Iran. Iran is behind all of this. Iran is enjoying the fact that Israel was diverted towards a front in Gaza. Most of the world is ignoring the fact that Iran continued to advance to a nuclear weapon. And it's the irony of history that the prime minister that spoke about Iran for 20 years is now busy with absolute victory in Gaza, that many are asking whether this is the right goal for the war.
Mr. Yatin, I want to ask you about the little positive thing you had in your part, the possibility of de-escalation, which is can only happen because of the potential hostage deal. How do you see this evolving? You see an option for a hostage deal? And if not, is there a military solution for getting the hostages out? Thank you.
Okay. The hostages deal is under negotiation as we speak. The Paris framework is asking for two stages. Stage one, 35 to 40 vulnerable people, the women, the female soldiers, the elderly, and the people who are wounded. And the price for it, terrorists from prison, the negotiation is on how many and how bad they are, how much blood on their hand. It is solvable. The second is humanitarian aid to be doubled. Everybody agree, no problem. Then ceasefire for each one of them one day, and then a 7 day for the second stage negotiation. Also agreed. What really is not agreed is the two demands of Hamas that ever in the Paris framework were kept for the second stage. End of the war and withdrawal of Israel from Gaza. Hamas asked these two to happen on the first stage, and Israel cannot agree to it because then it is left without any leverages for the continuation of the negotiation. So whether Hamas will get now in the territorial issue more than Israel was willing to give, a withdrawal from the city centers and taking the corridor off, which is now, I think, the only issue that keeping us from an hostages deal. If Israel will agree to withdraw from the corridor, I think we will have a deal next week. I'm not in the rooms of negotiation, but this is my assessment. If this is not happen, I will recommend not to do two stages, to do one step. And basically get Hamas demands, stop the war, withdraw to the security zone, the 1 kilometer perimeter, and do the deal for all the hostages. All the hostages. If there is no deal, Israel will have to renew the military pressure, because this is the only thing that brought the hostages back, the first deal.
Retired Major General Amos Yadlin. President Isaac Herzog is in Rwanda today on a short diplomatic visit. He's meeting with local officials and international leaders and also participated in a ceremony marking the 30th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide. President Herzog presented the Rwandan president, Paul Kagame, with a tag calling for the release of the immediate release of the hostages. His trip is part of Israel's international efforts to secure the return of the hostages. Britain's Foreign Secretary David Cameron, in a message marking 6 months since the October 7th attack, issued a call for the release of the hostages held in Gaza.
On October the 7th, Hamas carried out the deadliest attack on the Jewish people since the Holocaust. 183 days later, Hamas still holds over 100 hostages. Today, Our appeal is as strong as on the day they were taken. Hamas must release them, every one of them, right now. We know little about the conditions of their captivity. We cannot even be sure who is still alive. But we know who they are. Two British nationals and the citizens of many other nations. Students and festival goers, construction workers and a historian of the Holocaust. Parents, children, loved ones. The Prime Minister and I have met the family members of many hostages. They are showing incredible courage in the most unimaginably difficult circumstances. It is utterly inhumane to extend their agony. And so today, 6 months on from October the 7th, we renew our solidarity with the victims. We stand with the families. We condemn the terrorists. And we call again, send the hostages home.
British Foreign Secretary David Cameron. Before the weather and return headlines, here's the Dan Reichel Project. Mechake.
יום אחד זה יקרה בלי שנרגיש משהו ישתנה משהו ירגע בנו משהו ייגע בנו ולא יהיה ממה לחשוש וזה יבוא כמו קו חרוט על כף יד זה יבוא בטוח בעצמו כאילו היה שם תמיד וחיכה רק שנבחין בו וזה יבוא אתה תראה הידיים הקפוצות יתארחו והלב השומר לא להיפגע יפעם בקצב רגיל זה יבוא כמו שהטבע רגיל להיות שלם עם עצמו אחד זה יקרה בלי שנרגיש משהו ישתנה משהו ירגע בנו משהו ייגע בנו ולא יהיה ממה לחשוש וזה יבוא כמו קו חרוט על כף יד זה יבוא בטוח
And the weather outlook, cool for the time of year tomorrow. Chance of local rain in the north and along the coast in the morning hours, spreading to the center over the course of the day. Slight chance of flooding in streams in the east. Tuesday and Wednesday's day will be gradually cooler with local rain and a chance of flooding in streams in the south and east. Thursday will be warmer, mostly in the hills and inland. Chance of light local rain in the north and center through the afternoon. The temperatures forecast for tonight and tomorrow. Jerusalem 9 to 20, Tel Aviv 14 to 20, Haifa 15 to 20. That would probably be 19 to 20 in Jerusalem. Tzfat 11 to 16, Tiberias 16 to 25, Beersheba 13 to 26, and in Eilat from 17 degrees tonight, going up to 28 degrees Celsius tomorrow. Taking another look at the news headlines this evening, reports that there was an interception of an incoming threat that set off sirens earlier this evening in Tzfat and Upper Galilee communities. Four IDF soldiers are killed in an ambush in the southern Gaza Strip. The IDF withdraws ground troops from southern Gaza's Khan Yunis, leaving one brigade to secure a corridor in the enclave. The manhunt continues in Samaria for the terrorist who seriously wounded an IDF soldier and moderately wounded another person in a shooting attack. The Israeli team is in Cairo for talks on a hostage release and ceasefire deal on the six-month mark of the war started by the October 7th Hamas-led attack on southern Israel. Rallies in Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and around the world tonight demanding the return of the 130 hostages in Gaza. The weather outlook cool for the time of year tomorrow. Chance of local rain in the north and along the coasts spreading to the center. That's the news. Join us tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on Kan Reka, the foreign languages channel of the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation. Watch our 2 p.m. news flash on the Kan English Facebook page. Find us on Spotter, Spotify or write to us at conenglish@con.org.il. Together with sound engineer Elad Zor, this is Nomi Segal wishing you good evening and shalom from Jerusalem.